Greetings, this is Reverend Juliet Nightingale, and welcome to this transmission of Toward the Light, Leading Back to the Source. This is a program centered on near-death, out-of-body, and similar spiritually transformative experiences and related topics, including what people should know about the dying process, the many facets of after-death communications, living interdimensionally and being multisensory, intuition and telepathy, and more. We feature special guests who are both experiencers and researchers in the realm of NDEs and related topics. You're more than welcome to ring in and make comments or ask questions during the show, and the numbers are located on the website. We'd like to let you know that there's an abundance of support and services available through our organization, Toward the Light. And for more information, please visit our websites, towardthelight.org and towardthelight.info, which is our media site. Donations are very much encouraged, welcomed, and appreciated. So thank you very much in advance for that. This week, we're very pleased to have a fellow medium and clairvoyant on the show, the author of a very good book entitled Powers of the Sixth Sense. And we're going to be talking about telepathy, mediumship, clairvoyance, clairsentience, all of this stuff. So you really want to listen to this. Let us welcome from Scotland, Jock Brockes. Hello, Jock, and welcome to Toward the Light.
Hi, Juliet. How are you this evening?
Oh, I'm very well, thank you. And it's so wonderful to have you on Toward the Light. And I've really been looking forward to talking with you because clearly we have got a lot in common here.
Yes, and, me too, Juliet.
Tell me a little bit, let's just sort of start at the beginning, I guess. How, you know, when you first discovered that you had these gifts, I know that in your book at the beginning you're talking about the fact that you got into martial arts and all of that at a very young age, actually, but you also, I believe, have been aware of your lifelong gift. Really, which is very natural to all of us, as you point out in your book, of being clairvoyant.
Yeah, I had it, Julie, since I was a child, but obviously as a child, I didn't know what it was.
Yes.
I spent most of my life, my uncle was a monk in a monastery, in a Catholic monastery, and my mother was Roman Catholic, and I was brought up a Catholic, but I spent most of my days in that monastery and all my school, you know, my school holidays and my summer holidays, and I used to go on religious retreats from about the age of seven, if you like. But I used to experience a great deal of what people would probably understand as psychic or spiritual phenomena.
Mm-hmm.
But because of beliefs and religious dogma, I couldn't really talk about it. So these things actually, you know, this phenomena would happen to me on a regular basis, and I would be able to intuitively know about someone, know about my friends. I was very aware of energy from a young age, and I studied various martial arts, and the martial art that I stuck to was a very ancient traditional spiritual art called ninjutsu, which was the ancient ninja and the samurai from Japan. So I became very focused on energy. But unfortunately, as I said, you know, religious dogma being the way it was, it was kind of forced out of me, and I was, you know, kind of taught that it was a bad thing to do. But I couldn't stop these episodes happening. And even when I joined the military and the army, I continued to have intuitive experiences, if you like. Which I just put down to, well, just me being me. I feel, you know, it was just a natural thing for me. But I didn't talk about it just in case people thought I was mad.
Oh, yeah, I understand that because, I went through very much the same thing. You know, having been born in Lancashire in the early 40s and actually thinking that everybody was like this. You know, I had this ability and I thought that everyone did, and then when I'd start talking about it, and people said, "Oh, you must be mad," and I said, "What?" I was so gobsmacked by all of that, really. And it was strange, but, you know, something interesting when you talk about visiting your uncle in the monastery, I know that, there's not a whole lot, but some of the monastic orders, I think, actually were more mystical and indeed open to that kind of thing, like some of the Carmelites and all of that. But then again, you know, you've got your mainstream religionists who just, you know, balk at all of this stuff.
Well, I think you're right. I mean, mainstream religion and churches and parishes, as they were known certainly in the UK, and various churches are very dogmatic when they come to it. And I mean, you are absolutely spot on, Juliet, when you say that the religious monastic orders and even, you know, from convents and nuns are they're spiritual communities. So this kind of phenomena, you know, happens on a regular basis. But of course, a lot of the time they don't recognise it. And I can remember when I was in the monastery on holiday and helping the priests and the brothers around there, I went to bed one evening and I saw this other priest who had just crossed the corridor, you know, and I shouted to him to say hello, and well, obviously the person was spirit, you know, and I didn't know that at the time, but this priest had ignored me. And I thought, you know, here, that's very rude, you know, a priest kind of ignoring you when you're trying to talk to them. So the next morning when I got up, I went to the rector and I said, you know, rector, I just want to make a complaint, because I tried to speak to the father, this priest, and I described the priest, and he just ignored me. I said, I don't know where it was, but he was going into this room. And he got kind of a bit like kind of white as a sheet, you know, and said, oh, you don't need to worry about that. That's, he's, you know, and he never said anything. He just kind of passed it off as nothing. But when I was out in the garden that day with a guy called Brother Pius, who has now since passed over as well, he told me that the priest that I was shouting at and speaking to had died 3 years ago, or a number of years ago, which kind of frightened me a little bit, you know. So you know, for the rest of the holiday that I was staying up in the room on my own, I couldn't sleep. I was terrified.
Oh, no. You know,
but of course, I found it was very natural after that, you know.
And you know, that's so interesting that, you know, people throughout the ages and all over the world, for some reason, are so frightened by seeing a deceased entity. And I'm not really sure why. Maybe it's just because people are so used to just being locked into the five sensory world that they do not...
Everybody in this day and age, Juliet, I think there's a massive shift and a massive change going on at the moment, and people are beginning to realise that the intuition, and there's more to life than the five sensory beliefs. But I think that a lot of our communities are still very much five sensory. And it's a shame, because they tend to live in this materialistic world where materialism is the god, is the, you know, the figurehead, and they don't realize this. And what happens is they cause themselves more problems than anything without actually recognizing who they really are. And this is one of the, when I do lectures or when I do workshops with my wife, and if I do, especially my martial arts, and when I teach the art that I teach them all to be sixth sensory. I tell them, you know, when they come in, they're no longer five, when they train with me, they're no longer five sensory, they're sixth sensory beings. And over a very short, you know, over a period of time, their minds, they start to unfold, and you can see slowly, you know, it's like an onion, that, you know, you're starting to peel them layers off, and the minute they start asking me lots of different questions about intuition, I know I've got them then. And then, you know, it's not long before they come and they start to talk about their own experiences, and they're finding this amazing, and it's changing their life in such a positive way. People that were depressed, that are managing to deal with depression, even through just coming to the classes that I teach. So they're not actually coming, where I try to teach people, they're not coming to learn the martial art, to learn to fight or learn to defend themselves. They're coming to learn to live.
I think that's a really exceptional point that you're making there. And also, the fact that, you know, I think once you bring to people's attention that these are very natural abilities, that a lot of them in time will actually start to remember experiences that they did have, especially as children, because children are so receptive by nature. We haven't been spoiled and conditioned so deeply, you know, as young children. And
yes,
you know, these points are very, very powerful, and I'm grateful, as you're pointing out, that it, you know, this knowledge is becoming more widespread. But something that's just been a natural and innate part of our being since forever, really.
Exactly. I mean, I have a lot of people, I'm sure you do as well, Julie, they think, God, you know, you're a medium, you can speak to the dead, you're amazing, you can do this, you can do that, or that's so. And I think, well, God, you could do it yourself if you just opened yourself up a little bit.
That's what I tell them too. Yes, exactly.
And
always.
They're so freaked out about it, you know. And even when I say to someone, you know, I'll actually prove now that you can tune into energy. And I've said to students in the past, look, give him your watch, give him your ring, give him this, and show them exactly what psychometry is, tuning into energy. And they're amazed that they can actually pick up a little bit of information. I think, now imagine, if you can do that from an inanimate object, if you just meditated and understood nature, understood the reality of the universe as it is, imagine how much more you could do, how much more you could achieve, how safer you could feel, and how much safety you could bring to your family and those around you.
And that's, again, a very important point. You know, it's so interesting, and I've spoken, you mentioned this in your book, and of course I mentioned it a bit on my show as well, and even in some of my writings. My daughter was in Manhattan during 9/11, and I was, you know, of course I was nowhere around. I was in Nashville, Tennessee. The only thing that I had to keep me sane that day was hearing her telepathically tell me, Mom, I'm okay.
Yeah,
if it weren't for that,
fantastic.
I would have been a hysterical mom.
That's fantastic. And do you know something? If you say the word, you just mentioned the word there, Juliet, telepathy.
Yes.
And people seem to be frightened of that word. And I think, in order to understand really what telepathy is, you can have so much fun with it. And I know that we've spoken, and you know that my wife works with me.
Yes.
We work all over the world, and my wife's also an author, and she writes about, you know, how to use your vibes and feel your vibes, and which is coming out next year. But my wife and I have a real great deal of fun with telepathy, to the point that, you know, we'll go shopping, she'll go shopping, you know, to the local store. And I'll send her a telepathic message to pick something up, you know. And she'll come back and she'll say, hey, I thought you wanted chicken, so I picked up this chicken for you. You know, and I think, you know, that's how simple telepathy can be. And
exactly.
You can have so much fun with it, just having games in the house, having games. We have games in the car with telepathy. And slowly but surely enjoying that side of it. It doesn't need to be a scary language. It doesn't need to be something that you can't understand. It can actually be something that you can have fun with, which is already innate inside you. And if you can manage to have fun with it in everyday life, imagine what could happen when you need to turn it on to save your life.
Well, exactly. And I find it, and I'm just going to be very bold and brave here and admit that I actually engage in telepathic conversations with friends and loved ones all the time. And in fact, this is very typical. I'll be in a telepathic dialogue with someone back in the UK, and then sure enough, you know, I would get a phone call, or later on we'd compare notes and we'd just resume the dialogue, and it would be exactly spot on. And you know, there's nothing freaky about it, because it's all about energy. Now, mind you, it's a higher frequency of energy. And it's, you probably know this too, that telepathy is not, it's not affected by time, space. So in other words, when it travels to another dimension or another location on the same dimension, it is equally as strong.
Yes. There's nothing that stops it. And you know, that's like when you're talking about time and space, that's something that kind of freaks people out, because I tell you a funny story. Actually, tonight when I was teaching my ninjutsu class, and I had some people who were new to the class. And I often stand and I give them the analogy. I talk about Sir Isaac Newton and the relative matter and how energy is actually atoms that vibrate at such a high level that you can't actually perceive it with the human eye. But you should see some of their faces when I actually turn around and I say, now look at this wall and look at all these items that are around you in this hall. They're not actually there. What you're looking at is an illusion. And they kind of look at me with this blank, drawn look on their faces thinking, my God, he's flipped. He's mad. And then when he tries to actually explain it, they tend to, you know, it takes a few times to explain it, and then they tend to get the grasp with it. But, you know, it's amazing to see their faces when I turn and say, you know, it's an illusion. You're actually just, what you're looking at isn't there. It doesn't exist.
And it's a hologram.
They can't work it out. And it's the same when you prove telepathy. And for instance, an example of telepathy I can give you yesterday, I'm actually a research medium, and I'm doing some research with some doctors from the Rain Institute and from a university in California. And I haven't been feeling too well recently, and of course I knew that the second round of tests and interviews were coming up. And I had actually sent a message telepathically to the doctor in question. And just as I was sending an email and a telepathic message, she phoned instantly.
There you go.
She says, you know, this is amazing. I just had this feeling that I had to phone you. Now, that doesn't preclude time, distance, or space, because we're like 4,000 or 5,000 miles away.
Right.
And at that same particular time, she phoned me as I was sending the message. So doesn't that give you a little bit of proof? Doesn't that maybe help skeptics try to understand something if it happens on a regular basis?
Well, exactly. And I'm wondering how we can help to remove the fear and the sensationalism away from this, because it is so natural. It's as natural as breathing to have these abilities.
I think the secret, Juliet, is having fun.
Yes,
now,
okay.
There is a serious side of it. Obviously, there's the serious side to mediumship. And you and I both know that it's a fantastic gift to have, and it's beautiful to bring some love and some comfort to people who are grieving, or to even be the catalyst to start them on their healing journey. And of course, we must realize that we're only the channels, and we, you know, we're actually receiving the information from spirit and through spirit. So it's all a part of this big thing. But I think that to try and take away some of the dogma and some of the fear is we need to introduce it in a fun way, and we need to have fun with it. And if we can have fun with it and open people's minds, then we're perhaps on the right direction. And when I first wrote the book Powers of the Sixth Sense, what I wanted to do was bring this kind of security and safety element and trying to make the world a safer place and blend it with spiritual values, spiritual understanding, and try to understand that we are actually spirit in human form and not human in spirit form. And it was very difficult for me to gain that balance to possibly try and open up people's minds that may be closed, you know? And that's been one of the hardest jobs for me, is to try and do that. And this is one of the things I say: in order for us to take away this fear, we need to have fun with it. And we can do. And I think that's what opens up people's minds.
Well, I think so too. And, you know, gratefully there's been a lot more dialogue opening up about this stuff. And also the fact that people like myself who are death experiencers who've been to the other side, it's moved way beyond hypothesis now. Because, I've had so much validation as a result to, being on the other side and seeing, and again, I use the analogy of an onion too, because I see the different dimensions, the different frequencies of energy being like the different layers of the onion.
Yeah.
And it's all interconnected. And I think you also pointed out in your book that we are simultaneously existing on different dimensions. We're not just, traversing on the physical plane at all.
Yes, you're right. I do actually use that. And I say, you know, being a medium and living in a sixth sensory world is actually it's fantastic because you're almost living in two worlds at the same time. And
yeah.
That gets a few heads scratching as well.
And toggling back and forth. And I remember once reading something from a psychic, and I apologize that I can't remember his name now. It's been so many years ago, but he was actually pointing out the fact that we've got nine senses, and you actually mentioned this in your book too, with the clairaudience, clairsentience, clairvoyance, and also the, just the ability to
There's clairgustance and clairsentience, and yeah, there's
and
lots
knowing.
Of senses. Yeah, claircognizance, and that is the highest form, the highest form of communication. And I'm sure you, as a medium, would know, and myself as a medium, when you stand on platform or you're at one-to-one giving a message and you don't hear it clairaudiently and you don't see it clairvoyantly, but you just speak it as almost like you're channeling directly, that's claircognizance. That's the highest form, and that's being almost at one with the divine.
And I feel that too. In fact, when I'm doing this work, I feel such an overwhelming enveloping of love. You know, it even brings me to tears when I'm doing this work, because there's just such profound love that is coming through me, and there's nothing spooky or freaky at all. Again, I guess just because it's so natural to me.
Exactly, and I think once you understand it, it is a beautiful thing to have. There's nothing better than seeing someone change their life for the better, or to help someone on the path to healing. And I must admit, I've had to heal, because you know a bit of my background. I had a very kind of strange background, if you like, within law enforcement, military, and various other things that
yes.
I did. And my wife is a fantastic healer. And if it hadn't been for Joanne, I probably wouldn't have healed as fast as I did, because I've seen a lot in my life. I was a military man. There was a lot that I experienced very quickly, more than most men or most women. But I still had to understand that healing factor, that kind of compassion and love that you can experience from letting it all out and having someone to help you through that. And mediumship is not only just about passing on messages from discarnate entities on the other side. Mediumship can be so much about healing the soul through just talking,
yes.
through speech, through channeling. And it's a wonderful, wonderful thing to do. And it's something that we needn't be scared of. I mean, I'm not a typical, as you would say, like a New Ager or a New Age hippie or anything like people would perceive.
Oh, me neither.
You know, exactly. And we're very down to earth. And when people come to me for readings, actually, and especially I've had a few men have come for readings that have lost loved ones, and they, you know, they come to me and they think, God, Jock, you're actually really normal. You're not like a psychic or a medium at all. And I think, my God, man, what do you think I'm going to be doing? Sitting in a big flowery white, you know, skirt or something with a crystal sitting in front of me and a crystal ball.
And a turban,
you know,
and all that.
Myself.
Yes.
And they're
amazed
at how normal I am. And I think, you know, open your mind, man, because you can do this.
Exactly.
You can do it yourself.
That's so nice, because we're doing the same thing. Every time I see a client or whatever, I tell them, you know, you can do the same thing that I'm doing. It's just something that I haven't blocked in my life. But, in other words, I do everything I can to help empower my clients as opposed to being a crutch for them and that kind of thing. And I want to talk about healing a bit more because I know that you do Reiki. And is that what Joanne does also? Does she do Reiki or does she do other
things? Joanne does Reiki, and I'm also an angel healer. And, I actually channeled, which I haven't taught to anyone yet. Over the past 3 years, I've been channeling directly from Archangel Raziel. And I've channeled some amazing entrance. Some amazing healing modalities that I've been working on, and I'm very scientific, Juliet. You know, I won't let it out there until scientifically I work with it. And I've been working, and also with my wife and with a few selected people, with the type of healing that I've had. And all healing's all the same. It all comes from the divine source, whether it's Reiki, Sekem, whether it's Chinese, you know, working on meridian points. It's all working with energy. But
exactly.
Our intention behind the healing is what actually, you know, what can actually direct it and make it go less or strong or wherever it's going to go. It's our love and our intention. It's where we, you know, where we want to feel it from. And my wife is a Reiki master, and she teaches many people. I'm a Reiki master as well. And I do angel healing and angel therapy, and I must admit, just let me say that anybody who wants to talk to their angels, they don't have to go in a workshop spending $1,000 to learn how to talk to their angels. They can just do it by sitting in a chair and talking.
That's telepathy, you know, and I think the same thing with
exactly
the...
Exactly what you said.
Yeah, and with the energy work too, because I'm a Reiki too. I'm not a master yet, but I am a Reiki too. A practitioner too, and what's interesting is even before I knew about Reiki, I was still in England at this time. And
yeah,
I,
you've got a bit of that accent still.
Yeah, I do. I probably won't lose that, although it's been watered down a bit. what's interesting is that I was sending remote healing energy to a recording artist. I don't know, I think it was 1969, 1970, something like that. He had hepatitis that he had contacted in the West Indies, and it was, you know, he ended up in quarantine and all that stuff. And I was actually getting ready to fly over to America to visit, and I told him that I was going to send him healing energy. And the following day, he had to go to the doctor, and he went to the doctor, and the doctor said, "I don't know what you've done, but you no longer need to be quarantined. You're almost completely recovered."
Fantastic.
And you know, I think that this healing energy and the telepathy, all of that works on the same principle, really.
Yes, it does. It does. And before, you know, when Joanne and I got married, just before our wedding, actually, we were involved in a near-fatal car accident, and I had a tremendous NDE, which I'll never forget. And in fact, if it wasn't for the other side calling and screaming my name to move, I wouldn't have moved at the right time that the impact happened, and Joanne and I would both be dead. We'd both be on the other side. But we actually had some tremendous NDEs at the time.
Now, is she an NDE also? She had an NDE also?
She didn't have it as strong as me. She was out of it, but I actually seen the whole accident happen from outside the vehicle, watching the whole thing,
okay.
And felt a tremendous love, and I felt angels that were surrounding us, and I actually came to quite a while after I came to in the vehicle, and it was just a tremendous feeling. I just knew. I actually heard before it happened. We were in Aberdeen, and we had broken down. We were actually on our way to get our wedding cake, to be honest. And it was bad snow and bad weather. And Spirit had actually given us warnings not to go out, but we were very, you know, we're only human. We were very kind of pig-headed. We wanted to get our wedding cake, and of course, me being an ex-military, and we'll be okay, you know. So I dug us out of the snow, and, you know, we can still make mistakes, can't we?
Sure.
I dug us out of the snow, and we were driving towards, and the car broke down first time. Had a bit of a warning. Now, this story I actually wrote, and it went in a magazine worldwide. The car had broken down, that first warning from Spirit. So I phoned up one of my students at the time. I said, "Hey, we're broken down, Richard. The recovery truck's not going to get here for another 3 hours. Can you come and help?" So he said, "No problem." He came and helped. But we got the car going again. And rather than going back home, where it'd be safer, Joanne says, "No, well, you know, let's go and get our cake. Let's go and see what we can do." So we carried on. And this was the third time. We broke down again. And we were sitting. I made a phone call to the recovery company again. And they said, "Right, okay, we'll be out." We pulled over to the side of the road. We put the ignition off. We put the hazard lights on. We did everything that we were supposed to do. But at that time, I actually heard a voice call me, and I believe it was my father from the other side had called my name, screamed it out loud, and I got such a shock, I dived over to the left, and at that particular time, we were impacted by a seven-ton lorry, a seven-ton truck, and went right over the top of us. And
wow.
The whole car was written off, it was halved in two. We had some really strange experiences. We were basically lifted out of our bodies. Our spirits were moved by angels, got to be. And after everything had calmed down, we were obviously came to again in the car. But we would have been dead. In actual fact, the police officers that came to the scene and the medical people, they just couldn't. This is why it went all over the newspapers in the UK, and it went in magazines, and they could not believe how we were alive.
Yeah.
And the only thing that actually survived out, and it was a funny thing, do you know what the irony of it was? While I was sitting daydreaming, you know, and kind of wondering about spiritual matters and all that kind of thing, and Joanne was reading a book on the afterlife, as it happened.
Well, so I was going to say, I'm sure that these NDEs actually brought home and validated these, all of these experiences that you've had with intuition and mediumship and what have you, because I know that my NDEs have done that for me too. They really confirm the fact that I'm not a nutter, that I have been in touch with the truth of reality all along and to keep up with it.
Yeah.
And, you know, they're very powerful experiences. And another
thing
that
I want... think when you've experienced them, Juliet, and then you really believe and you found the truth, nothing can waver you. And let me give you another kind of funny story. My mother is still a staunch Roman Catholic. And when I was, I'm sorry she is, and I'm sorry I'm saying this, but, you know, she was very much not, you know, this is the kind of thing, you're dabbling with the devil and all that kind of stuff, you know.
Yeah.
But she made me promise, and as my mother and as I respected her, I said, Mum, I've always been like this since I was a child, you know, and I actually gave her a reading and from someone that she'd lost close to that I didn't know, and she was absolutely amazed. But she thought it was evil, you know. And I said, and she says, no, promise me you'll go back to the monastery. My Uncle Tom had passed, but we still had a presence there. And you'll see the rector. Now, this was only a couple of years ago, Juliet. And I said, okay, I promise you. And I was really quite scared because I thought, well, I was driving back from Perth and going up to Aberdeenshire at the time. And I thought, I promised my mother I would go and see the rector and they would give me a blessing and all that kind of stuff. I said, but I'm really worried because I've got some readings booked in the evening I'm doing for people that are coming to see me. And I knew for a fact that the rector was going to do like a mini exorcism blessing kind of thing on me. And before I understood everything, I thought, God, I hope I don't lose this. I got some readings tonight, you know. And I thought, well, this is going to really test it out. So if I go to the monastery and then I get a blessing and all this kind of thing, and it all happens. And of course, I went to the monastery and I sat down and I met the rector, Jim McManus, and we were chatting away. And he started doing the Latin. He did the Latin rites over me. Now, I'd been studying all this stuff since I was a kid. So I knew exactly what he was doing. And anyway, I was really worried, and I thought, God, you know, and I left, and I did it, and I drove back home, and the women that were coming to see me for the readings, they came in for the readings, and of course, I was a bit nervous, because I just had this blessing, and this kind of mini exorcism on me, and I did it fine, spirit came through, it was amazing, you know, and I found myself phoning my mother back and saying, Mom, it didn't work, I had the blessing, I had everything else, did the exorcism on me, I'm still a medium. So eventually she started to accept it all, you know.
You know, that's so interesting because I think that the powers that be have demonized all of this stuff because it is real, it does work, it's exceptionally powerful, and it's got nothing whatever to do with evil. But when people want to keep this information and this power to themselves and not share it, because... when we know how immensely powerful we are,
yes,
you know, then we'll get out of our ways. You know, we're not these little me's anymore. We're divine in essence, and this is again just a natural part of our being. And
it is, and that's what I hope my book does for people. It makes them realize that they're empowered. that they can do so much more.
And I really like to find a way to lovingly let people know that there's nothing whatever that is evil or weird or freaky or you know, off-kilter with all of this stuff. It's just, it is so natural and so lovely. And I can't tell you, and I'm sure that the same is true for you, the peace
Definitely.
Of mind that we bring to people with this work.
Yeah.
The immense peace of mind.
My second book, which is actually done, is actually going to be quite controversial because it is actually called The Powers of the Soul.
Oh, good.
It's called The Powers of the Soul, and it's called Jesus, the Man, Medium, and Healer. And it proves that we've had, ever since the very beginning of time, from all through, and I debunk a lot of the stuff in the Bible as well, and I talk about the best medium in the world that ever lived and walked on this earth was Jesus Christ. And that is one of the things where in my next book I'm focusing on the fact that these prophets, even since Gandhi, since all over the world, since Jesus and even in Buddhism, every single one of these people that have been incarnated on earth have used the gifts of the spirit, of mediumship, of clairvoyance, clairaudience, clairsentience, claircognizance, clairsentience. All those gifts have always been used. So why should we be scared of it?
Exactly.
It is part of who we are. It is our soul. It is our destiny. And we can make this world such a safer place and a nicer place to live in if we realize that.
Well, I think so too. And just to put it in simple scientific terms, it's just simply about tapping into a higher frequency of energy. That's all it
is. Exactly.
You know, like, instead of AM radio or FM radio, we move to...
Divine radio.
Exactly. or die frequency radio. It's just moving the frequency into a higher frequency, which, in fact, is closer to the frequency of love, because love is very high vibrational frequency, whereas fear is very low vibrational frequency. And we should talk about that also, because I know that you mentioned in your book, you know, when we're in a state of fear, then we can't get the clarity, we can't get the input that we need to actually guide us and protect us.
Exactly, we can.
So the importance of really, and I also like how you address that it's important to breathe. When we're afraid, we stop breathing.
Well, you'll notice that from the book, I've spent a great deal of time on breathing.
Yes.
And everything exists on the breath. I mean, if we didn't have breath, we wouldn't live. Everything is in the breath, and meditation is on the breath. The breath is part of the divine. It's part of, it is what raises our vibration to God, to the universe. And we need to understand this. And in order to raise our vibration, breathing is a very important integral part of if you like, ethereal life, of spiritual life. And it's understanding that. And what I want to say as well, and anybody who's listening in, they don't, you know, people are frightened of meditation. They're frightened that, you know, they have to sit in a room, cross their legs and hum and ha and all that kind of stuff. They don't. And then one of the things I say, you know, you can learn it just through breathing before you go to sleep. Even when you're jogging, when you're out walking with a dog, you can meditate. You can be with the divine. And the best way to be is to be in nature, to go out into nature, away from the five senses of living in cities, etc. Get out into the country, get out into the mountains, get out into nature, breathe in life and understand that everything is part of your breath. Every part in nature continually moves, continually grows, and doesn't have to think about it because it's always innate in them.
That is such a good point. Now, are you are you familiar with the exercise, actually, PMA Chatwater turned us onto this, where you, you could be walking or sitting or lying down, it doesn't matter. You take each of your hands and you make a little loop with your index finger and your thumb, you know, like people are going to do when they're meditating, because that actually forces you to breathe more deeply.
Yes, it is an easy method to do. And you don't have to, you know, it's not something that that needs to be studied in depth. It's anything. And Joe, some of the things as well, to me, I say to my students, and it's like homework, you know, even when I'm in a class, I'll say to some of them, I want you to go home and I want you to think about a plant. I want you to write everything that comes to your mind about a tree or a plant. And whilst they're writing about these things, they come to me with such the most wonderful expressions and feelings that they have. They don't actually recognize that they're teaching themselves to meditate and they're teaching themselves to breathe. Because every single person who's been thinking about nature or writing anything down to do with what I ask them to do, they're actually moving into that spiritual dimension without even realizing it, because they have to open the mind to what nature is. So I do a lot of these things with my students as well, and get them to play with energy around their hands and things, you know, and which
I think
actually
that's
makes
wonderful.
Them breathe deeper.
Yeah, I actually live on a beautiful, large, large lake, it just takes my breath away when I'm walking along the lake and looking up at the sky. And I actually will do this with my hands. I'll just make the little circle with my thumb and index finger on both hands, and it's very, you know, low key, as it were, and I'm just walking along, but I notice straight away when I'm, at the moment I've done that, that I'm actually breathing more deeply and I become more relaxed. So wouldn't you say that, if people start to get kind of panicky or anxious about something, that if they do that will actually help them to breathe better?
Exactly. Well, a lot of the things I teach and things that I've wrote about in the book is when people are experiencing fear, they need to be able to enhance the fear and make the fear a natural weapon for themselves to use, and that's in the breath. If they breathe deeply and they try to consciously deepen their breathing, the negative energy that surrounds them, that's feeding the fear, will negate, it will reduce, and then people will be able to have clarity of thought, and also spirit will be able to get through to them more, you know, easier, and you know, the universe will be able to send them little signals of anything that they need to warn them about, or anything that they need to take heed on. So, you know, by breathing and learning to breathe and control the breath is the element of survival.
Yeah.
Both mind, body, and spirit.
One thing that I would like to say about fear, though, because I'm not really one to condone fear at all, and I do like to make the distinction between fear and caution.
Yeah.
Because caution, you know, that's all right, you know, that's necessary. But I think fear is a very low vibrational frequency,
once again,
that does not allow clarity. So I would make the distinction to encourage caution, but not fear.
Well, and we can remain cautious.
Yes.
And cautious can just be within your conscious mind of being aware of what's around you.
Right.
And being aware of your environment. But we should be able to recognize if any fearful thoughts or any fear comes in, is to extinguish it. Now, one of the things that I say about fear is I have kind of penned my own mnemonic called AWARE. And basically what that is accept the thought, accept the thought, whether it's a fearful thought or anything, accept it, witness it, okay? Recognize it and eradicate the thought. Eradicate it with love. And that's the most important thing. If we remain aware and we can accept these, and everybody gets fearful thoughts, every single person. And sometimes it might actually be a grounded spirit who's just playing with you. But at the end of the day, if we can recognize it and we can understand it and recognize that it's a low negative vibration, then we can transmute that negative vibration to a very positive vibration. And that means, and let me give you that analogy. Imagine that you're in a very, very dark room with nothing, no light, nothing on. And you spark, you put on a torch or you spark a match or anything. Then you will be able to see through that darkness and you'll light up the room and you'll be able to see light. Right?
Exactly.
So that proves that the light always transmutes the darkness. It always turns the darkness into something better. Now this also tells you as well that even if it's really light, dark cannot transmute through light. It can't turn the light into dark.
Beautiful.
So it's a win-win situation with the light always.
And this is such a wonderful point. I'm so excited about this because actually for the past few shows, from my different guests, we've all been bringing up this very, very statement. I love this. It's a very powerful, simple but exceptionally powerful statement because it's so true. And in fact, I mentioned, I think Einstein as a youth had indicated there's no such thing as darkness. There's only the absence of light.
Exactly. And just like you said.
So when we switch on the light, kablam, that darkness is gone in an instant.
It's gone.
Boom.
There's a way. So that tells you that no darkness can actually penetrate your light. And if you are a light worker and you're filled with light, darkness won't penetrate you.
And sometimes it tries just because it's aggressive, but it just can't do it. It just can't do it. And I think the fact that so many of us have been sent back to this plane to share these messages is right there a testament to the fact that the light is going to prevail. It's got to prevail. Because it is the ultimate reality.
There's such a shift going on. There's such a shift, Juliet, where so many light workers in the world are anchoring the light in and proving that light is transmuting our darkness. And no matter what happens, the light will always prevail.
Yes.
And at the end of the day, my book, I'm hoping that my book is a beacon of light. I hope that it, you know, if it helps one person in the world, it's done its job.
It's a great book, and it's a very practical book. And again, the title of the book is Powers of the Sixth Sense. And people can find it on your website, jockbrockes.com. Or do you have another website as well, Jock?
Yeah, there's the powersofthesixthsense.com, which is in the process of being launched.
Okay.
And also, I believe you're going to be doing a giveaway or possibly a kind of competition for your listeners.
Sure.
I'm sending you over some books.
Okay. Well, you can certainly share some more details about that. And, of course, after this transmission of Toward the Light, I will be putting your profile page on towardthelight.org. So it'll be towardthelight.org/Jock Brockes. And I will put your book on there and also your definition of the word aware. I really like that. I saw that in the book, too. And I just thought, oh, that's so spot on. That's excellent. Do you have any interesting events coming up that you'd like to share with our listeners? Anything of note that you'd like to share?
Well, obviously, my wife and I are in the process of emigrating over to your side of the water.
You're coming to America, are you?
Yeah, we're coming to stay. We're in the process of going through all the red tape at the moment.
Oh, blimey, where?
We're hoping to be in New York, in Long Island.
Oh, for goodness sakes, well, you have to come and visit me because I'm in Vermont and we can hang out on the lake and
have a wonderful day. We're going to be doing evenings of mediumship over there. We've got an evening of mediumship booked in Kansas and LA, and we've got one in New York. We've got obviously a lot of radio shows to do. And my wife is releasing her book at the end of the year as well, so we're going to be traveling with that. Her book's called Feel the Vibes. And we're a unique husband and wife team, and we're coming over, and we've travelled the world a little bit, and we're coming over to settle our roots over there. And the reason being is when I wrote Powers of the Sixth Sense, it was written for everyone in the world, but it was written basically for the American after 9/11 and after all the disasters that were in the world. Then I wrote it to try and open people's minds to the idea that, you know, within our spirituality, we actually have the weapons to fight against terrorism, abuse, all the things that happen in the world that doesn't need to happen because we can stop that through our own gifts of the spirit. And I think that's something that needs to be recognized. And again, that mnemonic, Juliet, you know, if we remain aware, and aware can be so many things.
Oh, yes. And, you know, that's another interesting point is that I had a very lucid dream about that 10 years in advance of it happening. And so I know the real details behind all of that. And and so many, I mean, I can't tell you how many countless times the dreams, the intuition, the messages coming from the other side have literally saved my life. And lives in the family, and so, you know, that's exceedingly important, and we can't stress that enough, how important it is, again, yeah, instead of falling into fear, to actually focus on being aware and listening to that, because it happens in such subtle ways, as you know, as well as not so subtle
exactly
ways.
Exactly. So many subtle ways that can lead us to recognize the information from the universe, you know. And I like yourself, you know, my life has been saved on a number of occasions, and only because of my intuition, not because of the skills I learned in martial arts or the skills I learned in the military, but because of the divine intuition that I understood is why I'm alive today.
Yes, that is. I think that's the greatest weapon there is, the weapon of love and the weapon of awareness,
yes,
and consciousness. And, we've definitely got our work cut out for us, because in the years that I lived in Nashville doing music and all of that, you know, in America it's referred to as the buckle of the Bible Belt. And unfortunately there are so many people really stuck in their religious dogma, you know, who are demonizing all of this stuff. And,
yeah,
you know, how can we lovingly set an example to these people that nothing could be further from the truth?
Exactly.
This stuff will actually save lives.
Listen, look at the terrible disaster that happened in the floods. No, God, not Arizona. Where am I thinking about?
The tsunami.
Not the tsunami, no. In America.
Katrina. Katrina, that hurricane.
And when New Orleans flooded and things like that. You know, many more lives could have been saved, and I'm sure a lot of people, I'm sure the universe and God in his infinite wisdom was letting everybody know what was going to happen, what was coming, you know, and it's just unfortunate that 5th century people don't recognize it.
Now, you know, and that's another point, thanks for reminding me, because I was thinking about the tsunami I mean, you know, where it happened was that actually already Boxing Day, but it was Christmas Day still here in America. I was all alone, and I was so upset. I was exceedingly upset, and I thought, Brian, what's the matter with me? I'm used to being alone on Christmas, no big deal. But I was really, really depressed and upset and
anguished. Yeah, you're big, yeah.
And what happened was, later that night, I heard the news on radio, and I thought, oh, blimey, well, that was it. Because the tsunami was happening, and it was impacting me. And so I was exceedingly, you know, upset about it. But the fact is, and this is very important, the animals knew, and they knew to get out of the way. And why people are so daft that they will not listen to their own intuition to warn them, there's a tsunami coming, get out of the way.
Well, do you know something? I'm sure I've mentioned it in my book as well. I have a friend called Dr. William Bloom, who's a world-renowned spiritual teacher and author himself. And he was telling me that he had a dream like yours, a precognitive dream, about the tsunami beforehand. Now, he was actually booked to go there on holiday with his family, and
that's
he cancelled
right.
it, and he lost about $1,500, but he knew it was going to happen. And although he lost the money, his family are alive, you know, because he stayed in London and the tsunami hit.
I remember reading that.
Yeah, exactly. And another person, another friend of mine, another author, and I'm sure everybody knows him, Dale Graff, who wrote my foreword, who was actually the director of Project Stargate, you know, the military and the CIA intelligence, you know, working with the psychic phenomena and things like that. And he's a fantastic guy, and he's very, very well clued up in precognitive dreams, you know, and he's had some amazing experiences of warnings from spirit in precognition of disasters. But the difficulty is just trying to get people to listen. You know, how do we do this?
Yeah, and I think we might be getting much closer to that now, because so many of us, and you know, I'm also very scientific-minded as well. I was never a hippie or a New Age or anything like that, but I've always been a mystic, so there you go.
Yeah, exactly. But I think you have to remain. I think all good mediums and psychics and mystics have to also have an element of skepticism around them in order to remain grounded, focused, and scientific to ensure that we're passing on the right information.
Yes, I think so too. And the important thing also is to be always coming from a place of love, because I think, again, the example we set is going to be the loudest testament of this truth, you know, and to help remove the stigma and the fear that is around this. But fortunately, that is starting to happen more, and that's really wonderful. Well, already I've seen that we've this hour has already gone by, and hopefully soon that we'll be able to do two-hour slots every week. We're working on that, and that will be lovely, because I feel like we're just warming up, and then we've got to conclude for the for the evening.
Yeah, excellent. Well, hopefully we'll chat again.
Oh, we will do, and it will be so nice when you come to America, and who knows, maybe I'll blow back to England. Who knows?
Excellent. Listen, when we come over there, we'll all get together.
And we will indeed, and I'm so looking forward to that. It's wonderful having you. We've been speaking with Jock Brokish from Scotland, a wonderful medium, fellow near-death experiencer, and an author of the book, The Powers of the Sixth Sense. And we're going to be having a special little competition or contest, as it were, for getting copies of that book out to people. And it's really been wonderful having you with us, Jock. You've been listening to Toward the Light, Leading Back to the Source. This is Reverend Juliet Nightingale reminding you that it is only with the heart that one can see rightly. What is essential is invisible to the eye. Please remember that only love prevails. There is no darkness, there is only light. Next week, we are going to have the former president of the International Association for Near-Death Studies, Elaine Stout, is my special guest. She's a near-death experiencer and a very, very wonderful woman, so it would be nice to have her back on the show. Please join us next week for another transmission of Toward the Light. Blessings and love to all of you. We will talk to you next week.
Good night.